Everyone, you're listening to New World Order, episode 339. In this episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about audio. And I want to talk about audio because in the previous episode, we spoke about ALSA and a bunch of utilities for ALSA. And I keep feeling like a lot of times people talk about different systems of audio on Linux without really tying it all together. There's quite a bit of confusion, I find, about what ALSA is versus OSS versus Sound versus Pulse Audio and so on. So I'd like to be able to kind of clarify that in one tidy package, which is hopefully this episode. So the first thing to understand is that ALSA, as we covered in the previous episode, is the driver package for sound on Linux. It's your primary source of communicating with hardware, the audio hardware of your computer. And that's what ALSA provides. That's a very important task, and it is something that ALSA brings to your computer. So if you have a computer and you've installed Linux onto it, and your audio hardware doesn't appear to be recognized or compatible, then quite possibly the problem is that whatever ALSA is providing you is insufficient, whether it's because you need to update ALSA itself, maybe you need a newer distribution with updated drivers, or whether it's simply because the laptop is just, it's too new, and there's some exciting new audio card that came out that ALSA hasn't had time to write a driver for, or that isn't covered by an existing driver in ALSA. So that's the thing to, I guess, blame in the nicest way possible when audio hardware isn't apparently recognized by your computer. Now, whether or not it's not, whether it's actually not being recognized, or whether you just haven't configured it correctly to be your audio source, your input or output source, is a completely different question. I'm just saying that if you're thinking about audio drivers and Linux, and you're used to maybe going to somewhere to download specific drivers for that card, that's not really something that you would do typically in Linux. It's something that would just be included in the ALSA package. Now, I'll freely admit that there are probably exceptions to that, and some maybe very specific hardware device maybe does have specific drivers for it that you might install. I mean, I'm not going to say that's out of the realm of possibility, but in terms of grabbing a laptop off the shelf and installing Linux, the thing that provides audio interactions, or interaction with audio hardware rather, that's going to be basically ALSA. That's what you're going to look at for trying to figure that out. And it's the figuring out part that can get tricky, and I do want to cover that in this episode. Before we get there, let's talk a little bit about the different component. So ALSA is directly talking to the hardware. So what is talking to ALSA? Well, traditionally, and by traditionally I mean like maybe 10, 12 years ago, there wasn't anything talking to ALSA. You were talking to ALSA. So when an application wanted to play a sound on your computer, it would talk to ALSA directly and say, hey, I'd like to use that audio card now to play a sound. And ALSA would hand over control or open up access to an audio device, to whatever application is requesting it, and it would play a sound. That's how it was done. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about audio waves, like actual, you know, audio waves, like vibrations in the air and stuff, or if we were talking about MIDI signals, which we talked a little bit about in the previous episode as well. A synthesizer, like a sound that is being synthesized by the audio card itself. So whether you're talking about synthesis or recording that's going to produce audio waves, I mean, synthesizers eventually produce audio waves as well, but when the data that you are sending to the audio card could either be a PCM file or a request to generate some kind of synthesized sound, and ALSA would handle that on an application or per application basis. Now, that became somewhat inefficient, or people started noticing that was inefficient at some point, and so there were some systems built to intervene between you and ALSA. One of those systems that was developed was called JAC, is called Jack. That's the Jack Audio Connection Kit. And it is an interface, it's an application that runs on your computer, that can run on your computer if you have it installed and you start it up specifically. And it manages calls out to ALSA and ensures that everything that wants ALSA's attention gets ALSA's attention very quickly. Jack is very popular among people who are making music on Linux because it enables lots of different applications to request events to happen, audio events, and Jack deals with ALSA so that those sounds can be heard, ideally without much of a delay. And that's always been kind of the battle with people making music on any computer platform, really, is try to get that latency down so that the moment that you make a sound with an instrument or your voice or something, that sound is being echoed through the computer speaker with minimal delay or with minimal latency. And the significance of that is because if you are trying to play along with some other sound that's being produced by the computer, you want to make sure that everything's lining up exactly. So if you have a severe delay between when you're making a sound and when it comes out the speaker, it doesn't sound like it's sunk up to you. So that's Jack, and it's pretty purpose-driven. It's intended really for exactly the use case that I've just described, and that is when you've got this audio set up and you have maybe something that you're recording through a microphone, you've got some software synthesizers, you've got maybe a drum machine all happening on the computer. You need to wire all those applications together into a kind of a virtual mixing board and make it so that all those sounds are happening together at one time. And that's what Jack does. That's kind of the purpose that Jack fulfills. Now, Jack was a little bit certain people felt that Jack was a little bit too specific, a little bit too specialized, and that wiring little virtual sound cables from one application to your virtual mixing board, maybe that was a little bit advanced or specialized, and people wouldn't generally want to have to do that. They would rather, for instance, just open up an application and know that it was going to play the sound that they expect it to play. They don't need to wire applications together as such. They just need to make sure all the applications are plugged in to that main output on the computer. And a little bit with even more complexity, maybe they wanted to make sure that those applications could be wired into some main output that isn't even necessarily connected to that computer. So for instance, maybe you want to be able to play to send the sound of some application to another device entirely, because for whatever, maybe you're not in the same room as that computer. And so if you're playing sound remotely, then you want that sound to be remote. You want that sound to be delivered to you over your connection. So in other words, maybe you've got your home server upstairs in the attic. Well, you're not going to go upstairs in the attic to listen to the sounds of a little game that you're playing, or the alert sounds of applications when they chime at you. You want those delivered to the little terminal, as it were, that you're connected to in the living room. You've got your laptop on your lap, and you're just remoting into that home server. And so people wanted the ability to send those audio events over a network and deliver them to some remote sound device. The answer to this came in the form of Pulse Audio. Pulse Audio is another application that runs in the background on a computer, and it listens for a bunch of different signals from a bunch of different applications and makes sure that they each get equal time through that audio device. How it does that, I don't know. I've never looked into either Jack or Pulse on the technical level. I'm not even convinced I would understand it if I did, at least right now. But that's what it does. It's sort of a mixer, but not one where you have to sort of get in and fiddle around with a bunch of stuff the way that you do in Jack. And it's a bit more than a mixer too, because it is it's they refer to it as an audio server, To be fair, Jack could probably be called an audio server as well, but or a sound server. But Pulse kind of makes it a little bit more desktop driven, so a little bit less about wiring different applications, the inputs and outputs of different applications into each other and then out to your sound device, and more about just getting those applications hooked up to some output device, whether it's local or remote. I mean, for the record, I don't mean to separate Pulse and Jack by saying that Pulse can do one thing and Jack can do another thing. Jack 2, at least, it's Jack 2, confusingly, is Jack 1.0. It can send events over the network as well, and we've even seen that also MIDI can send events, certain events, over the network. So, I mean, it's not like Pulse is revolutionary in that sense. I think that Pulse instead is revolutionary in the sense that it has been adopted nearly universally. And for the things that have not adopted it, there's also a plugin for Pulse so that things can think that they're talking to ALSA but actually be talking to Pulse. So that's one thing. And then the intended audience has been very specifically, I think, for the desktop user. It's a desktop mechanism rather than Jack, which really never, I don't think, has ever claimed to be the audience intended for an audience of a desktop user. It's been more, I think it's been acknowledged more as a thing that has been geared towards people who need to, as I say, wire applications into each other and then out of each other and then back into the system and so on. Okay, so Pulse. Pulse Audio is a really, really cool little invention. A lot of people don't like it because I guess they just prefer the simplicity of ALSA. But I will say, as someone who does a little bit of sound every now and again on a computer, on a Linux computer, that Pulse is actually quite nice. It's really, really useful, and it seems to, at least in my experience, stay out of the way. And it does kind of simplify a bunch of stuff. It makes a lot of different systems. It takes a lot of different systems and kind of simplifies them and sets them in front of you in a way that you can really, really, truly understand. So I quite like Pulse myself. There are those who would prefer to just talk directly to ALSA, and there's a certain beauty to speaking directly to ALSA, I guess. But there's also there are drawbacks. For instance, it used to be that when I wanted to start, if I was starting a sound application like QTractor or something like that, I could be composing music, and then if I thought, well, I need a sound sample from somewhere, so I'd open up Firefox and go to freesound.org and look for a sound sample. And every single time, if I tried to play the sound sample in Firefox, I couldn't hear it. It wouldn't play because QTractor was already occupying the ALSA slot. So the sound card was spoken for, essentially. It wouldn't let Firefox play a sound. If I recall correctly, that was technically, I think, I don't want to say it incorrectly, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. But don't quote me on this, even though I'm recording it for posterity. I think that was technically a bug in Firefox, if I'm not mistaken. That was actually a problem with how they were talking to the Linux sound system. But the end result still was that you couldn't kind of dash out of your pro audio, with some air quotes around that, your pro audio environment and do something that was not pro audio easily. There are ways to pause and hook things into another thing, and you could generally get around it, but the user experience was a little bit painful. And I have to say, I think it's gotten a lot better now. I feel like there's been a couple of times where I've had a laptop or something with some weird audio interface problem, but generally speaking, it just all kind of magically works now between ALSA's hardware detection and Pulse's ability to dumb that down for me and make sure that all the audio inputs and outputs are clearly labeled and clearly discoverable by the user. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how you can make sure that you understand Linux audio. Because if I had a, well, probably realistically, like $1,000 or something for every time that I've heard that Linux audio is too hard, or it's inconsistent, or just won't work, or whatever, then I'd be a millionaire. Possibly less, probably maybe $100 per time. I mean, it's been a lot of times, but I also don't want to underestimate how big of a number a million is. But either way, point being, I've heard this a lot. People seem to love to complain about audio on Linux, as well as usually something else like video on Linux, or really Linux in general. And it typically happens under a high pressure situation. That's usually where this sort of ugly complaint rears its head. It's usually in a conference room or at a presentation being given, and something's not working, and it needs to be working like right now, and it's not. So you kind of you default to, well, this Linux stuff and this open source stuff, it's not as easy as such and such. And I just haven't found that to be true. However, that said, if you're not familiar with how audio is delineated on Linux, it can be tough. It can be difficult. And it's kind of a big, it's a big sort of, it's a big complex thing in terms of how to get it all straight. Because we can conflate a bunch of unrelated things together and make it complicated, or we can deal with these things as separate issues. And that's what I'll do right now. So the first thing to do on a computer, if this is your computer, or if you're going to be dealing with this computer for an extended amount of time, the first thing that you're going to want to do, if you're starting to think about the audio system, is forming a meaningful bond with the hardware, the actual physical audio devices of your contained in your computer. Now, on laptops, a lot of times this is like one port, maybe two, if you're lucky, which means that you probably have a headphone jack that probably doubles as a microphone jack. That's a pretty common thing these days. Not all of them. There are some that are sort of holding that traditional line of having a hardware port, rather a headphone port, as well as a microphone port, like a separate port. So you have two ports, one for input, one for output. But typically, or these days, I see a lot of laptops that just reduce all of that down to a single port, kind of the way that cell phones do, and they have the option of using one of those three-striped headphones with the it's got the mono, stereo, and input options. So that's a pretty common thing. And then on desktops, a lot of times you have, well, a lot more. At least in my experience, again, I mean, I've never bought a desktop out of a store before, but I have. Well, I mean, that's not entirely true. I did back in university. But that wasn't back. That wasn't. I hadn't discovered Linux yet, so that doesn't. It doesn't have meaning really in this context. So I've never purchased a pre-built laptop from a store. I built my own, and the motherboards that I've always chosen have like six audio ports in the back, and then like it looks like two here in the front. So you've got sort of, it swings wildly the other way. Point being, you want to get familiar with those ports. You want to know where they are. You want to see what they claim they provide, and just kind of get a good idea of what you're dealing with on the physical side. And I think a lot of times we skip this over because we think, well, the only one I care about is this stereo one here. Just the output. That's the only one I care about. So we think to ourselves, well, okay, we have a stereo output, we have the output one that's plugged in, and that's all I need to know. And that's not really all you need to know. You should know even the ports that you don't care about, you should know that they exist because you're gonna have to know to ignore them, essentially. Okay, so knowing as we do from also Utils that there's the a play command, and that's a play dash dash list, I think. Nope, just dash L, sorry. And that lists all of the playback hardware devices on your machine. Again, if you don't have a play command available, then you need to install also utils. If you're on Slackware, certainly that's already it's already there. But if you're not, then you might have to install that separately because in modern computing, it seems everyone assumes that you're not really dealing that directly with ALSA, and so you don't, in theory, need the utils for that. And you may not need the utils. Also, utils is it's great for that low-level investigation, but frankly, you may be able to just open up your pulse mixer, your sound settings, and look at what pulse tells you. So first of all, we'll look at ALSA, and then we'll look at pulse. So ALSA, the A play dash L, for me, lists three different cards, but those cards are spread across something like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, something like 7 entries. And that can be confusing as well, because why are there 7 things? And you might think, well, you said that there were 6 ports in the back of your computer, so that's probably related to this. Actually, it's not. So here's what we have to work with. We've got card 0, I've got as my analog output device. Card 0 also contains a digital output. And then card 1 is labeled as my NVIDIA card, and there are a bunch of HDMI outputs listed underneath that. And then finally, card 3, we skip card 2. Card 3 is Plantronics, which is the microphone, or the, well, yeah, it's the headset with a microphone, but it also has your headphones that I'm using to record this podcast right now. So remember, A play is just playback devices, so these are output devices. So I know that I have an analog output and a digital output on the built-in sound card. The only reason I know that's built in is because I kind of recognize the serial number, like the vendor code ALC887. I kind of feel like that's vaguely familiar. It's also HDAATISB. Those are just strings of random letters and numbers, seemingly random letters and numbers, that I've come to associate with the sound cards that are built into modern motherboards. Also through the process of elimination, right? I've got HDMI. I know that's not the one that I'm personally using, and I know I've got the Plantronics one, which I recognize that. Now, the Plantronics one also identifies itself as a USB audio device. So of all known hardware devices here, I've kind of established that I've got HDMI, I've got the Plantronics, and then I've got the physical ports, the traditional physical 3.5 millimeter slash 1/8 inch audio jacks or audio ports. Okay, so what has that told us? Well, it's just given us a little bit of a layout here, and you know from the previous episode that we can look at a mixer to get an idea of what each of those cards actually contains. So we can do also mixer, but I have to do it as root. And it delivers me to Pulse Audio, as we discovered in the previous episode. But if we hit F6, it lists the separate cards. And these mirror what we got in A play dash L. I've got 0 being an HDAATISB device, so that's the built-in one. I've got the card 1 being NVIDIA. Now I do have a card 2 here, and that's the camera, a webcam that I have hooked up to my desktop right now. It didn't come up and under A play dash L because it's not actually a playback device. A mixer is showing me both capture and playback. And then 3 is Plantronics. So I'm just going to go back up to card 0 and look at card 0. And there you've got a bunch of different, you've got a full list of all the different options that this seemingly simple built-in audio device that was just one little, got one mention in my A play dash L. There's a whole spectrum of different options here. There's the master volume, there's the headphone volume, there's a PCM device volume, there's front mic again, surround, center, LFE side, And I think more. Yeah, there's more. So there's several screenfuls of this thing. I mean, depending on how long I make the screen, the terminal that it's in, I guess. But yeah, I've got line in, I've got line boost, I've got the SPDIF, which is the digital side of the card. I've got auto mute and back and rear mic. Wow. So there's a lot of entries there. Now, those are all really important, and if you're having trouble with your sound card or getting sound out of the thing that you think you should be getting, then this might be something that you would want to look at some point. Ideally, you don't have to look at this in today's day and age, but there it is. That's the delineation of all the different kinds of routing mechanisms available on your audio card. So if you've got your, I don't know, computer speakers plugged into, I don't know, let's say the black colored port on your computer, and you're not hearing sound, you might want to go into Ulsa Mixer, go to that sound card, and try to discover what actually is routing sound out to the black port. If you, then you could unplug the speaker and plug it into the green port and do the same thing. Find on your Ulsa Mixer what that actually is, what that maps to. And sometimes there's some kind of clue on the computer itself, especially desktops. A lot of times they come with little labels, and then I tell you, well, this is the surround sound port, or this is the left, this is the right, and so on. Or it might just be little icons that mean nothing to you. But if you want to discover what those are exactly, the way to do it, I'd say, is put on some sounds, some music or something, plug a speaker into each of those ports, and fiddle around with your Ulsa mixer to see what channel the Ulsa mixer is labeling each port. And then if you're going to be doing this often, I don't think it would be a crazy idea to make a little cheat sheet for yourself and just identify, come up with a little map for those ports and write down what those are. It's on card zero and it's labeled headphone. It's on card zero and it's labeled surround, and so on. So that's also Mixer. That's a really important sort of forensics system for getting to know your computer's sound devices. And I think honestly, that's about half the battle right there, is just understanding which audio port on your computer is which. Because otherwise, you can fiddle around with volume settings in every single application you have and every control panel you can find. If you've got your stupid speakers plugged into the wrong port, then it doesn't matter what you do. It's the hardware that's connected wrong. And so that's the very first step in any troubleshooting process. I think, I don't know anyone who would argue with that, is check the cables, check the physical world, and make sure that that's done correctly. Because if that's not, then nothing in the software side is going to help you. All right, so that's the ALSA command. Let's look really quick at the Pulse Audio side of things. Now, in Pulse Audio, there are a lot of different, not a lot, there are five different tabs in a typical volume control for ALSA. Now, this is presented differently depending on what kind of front end you're looking at. The one that I tend to default to, because it is the thing that comes available on Slackware, is PAVU control, PAVU control. And it's a control panel, the graphical control panel, GTK. There are five tabs on it, from right to left, confusingly. Configuration, input, output, recording, and playback. I say it's confusing because, in a way, that's the opposite way that you have to configure it. When you're using it, I think it makes a lot of sense. Playing and recording being the leftmost tabs makes sense because that's where generally you're going to hang out as the user. But when you're first setting up your computer, really you're going to default over to the right, which is the configuration tab. And it's kind of the simplified version of, or not even simplified really, it's kind of the version of A Play dash L. That's Pulse Audio configuration is A Play dash L, essentially. For instance, in my configuration screen, I see that I've got an HDA NVIDIA card, which it's turned off right now, or rather the the profile for it is set to off for Pulse because I never play anything through my HDMI on this computer. It got built-in audio. That's the kind of generic code word for that horribly ugly ALC887 or whatever it was in ALSA. So built-in audio. It's pretty explicit, really. I mean, it's or descriptive. It's the audio that's built into your computer, and that is set. The profile is analog stereo duplex, and that's significant because that means that it's going to play in stereo over the analog connection, but that it's capable of output and input at the same time. So it's doing both of those things. Duplex. That's a really important setting. If you're having trouble recording something onto your computer, it may be that your built-in audio is not set to accept input, and that you need to set it to duplex so that it can do both of those things. This also shows me my webcam that I mentioned earlier that we saw in ALSA Mixer, but didn't see an A-play-L. But I suppose if I did an A-record-L, I would see it. And yes, I do. It's listed as card 2 in A-record-L. So in Pulse, it's listed as a webcam, and it is set to analog stereo input. Which is correct. It is. It has a microphone on it, but it doesn't have any speakers on it to play back sound. And then again, there's the Plantronics device, which I'm using to record this podcast. So that's the configuration setup, and all it really is a list of. It is the output of A Play and A Record combined, and it offers different profiles so that you can configure it quickly to do what you want it to do. This is essentially a shortcut to going into ALSA Mixer and fiddling around with all the different channels yourself. You don't have to think about the channels. You simply tell, for instance, that built-in audio, tell it to be analog, stereo, and duplex. You know, in your mind, you can picture the little ASCII art of ALSA Mixer having the headphone volume turned up and the microphone volume turned up, so you've got both the input and the output channels active and on. Whereas in the webcam, you know that it's only input, but it is stereo, so in your little, in your mind, in your little ASCII ALSA Mixer representation, you're going to imagine the webcam having the left and the right channels both turned on and up. And in video, of course, you can imagine all the channels being muted and off. Now, you can kind of drill down into in more detail by going to the left, to looking at the input devices and the output devices, and you see the different devices that have been identified by configuration, but you see what they're looking at. For instance, my built-in audio stereo has the front microphone, but it identifies it. It senses that it's unplugged, and that's correct. That's because the microphone on my system that's active right now, the reason you're hearing my voice right now, is because my Plantronics headphone device has its microphone active, and it shows that indeed there's a signal right now being transmitted from my mouth into the microphone, my throat really, I guess. And then there's the webcam, which happens to be on right now. The microphone is on. I could click on that and I can't turn that off because it has no other options, but I could mute it, for instance, if I wanted to, or I could go back to configuration and tell it to turn the webcam off, but I'm not going to do that because I'll forget and I'll have to do all of this troubleshooting some other time. So that's output and input, and then there's recording and playback, which are dynamic, and this can confuse people sometimes because they think, well, my input devices are listed, but I don't see anything in my playback or recording, and that's just simply because there's nothing actively being played back or recorded right now. So, for instance, if I was not recording a podcast right now, I would not hear, or I would not rather see any activity in the recording panel because nothing's being recorded, right? Well, there is actually, there's something being recorded to Audacity, and so I actually see that. But generally speaking, I look, and there's nothing in recording. That doesn't mean I don't have any recording devices hooked up right now. It just means that there's nothing actively being recorded. The same goes for playback. If there's nothing actively sort of being told that it's going to be called upon to play sound, then you're not going to see it listed in playback. Output and input, however, are a lot less dynamic. They represent what's actually connected to your computer as revealed by configuration. That's Pulse Audio, and that's kind of how to make sure that the sound devices you believe should be active are active and sort of how they're configured, really, because like I say, if you want something to accept both input and output, then you have to set it. You have to tell it that that's the thing to do. Now, you can do that in Ulsa Mixer, or you can do it in Pulse. They both work. I don't see why you wouldn't do it in Pulse unless you don't have Pulse installed. And in that case, you would just do it directly through Ulsa Mixer. Okay, so we've got two things that we've done so far. We've looked at the hardware to make sure that the hardware that we think it exists actually does exist. And we've looked at Ulsa and potentially Pulse, and we've mapped the software representation of what the computer tells us exists to the hardware reality, to what actually is physically present in our computer that we can look at and account for. So the only really other two things that exist are the desktop controls and application controls. And this is the other sort of messy business that a lot of times gets conflated with that first set of messy business. So the stuff that we've just covered is just understanding your computer, knowing, getting to know your computer, and understanding how its sound is going to work and how you can sort of call upon sound to occur on your computer. But other times, like, let's say you've tested that, you've got an application playing music or sound consistently, you've plugged in the speakers, you've figured out from Ulsa Mixer and from Pulse Audio what your computer calls those devices, so you know the green output on the back of your computer maps here to the line out port of your built-in audio. You're aware of that. You know that that's what that's called. You know that this USB device is called this. So you've got all that figured out. You've tested it, and it's correct. And then, what do you know? The next day, you open up some application, and you start trying to play a sound, and nothing happens. Well, that's frustrating. What's going on? Well, there are two different things. So probably nothing's changed on your system. I mean, maybe you unplugged a USB device. That's definitely happened to me. I've definitely done that. I've looked over at my USB port, and I've said, the one on the top of my desktop, and I've said, okay, well, I've got my USB thing plugged in, cool. Why isn't Audacity picking up my Plantronics headphone? What happened? Well, nothing happened. If you didn't do anything, probably nothing happened unless you did. You unplugged the USB thing and plugged in something else. Sometimes I look over, I see it, I think, it's plugged in, why isn't the headphone working? And then I look again, and I realize, oh, that's my game controller that I had plugged in, and I ditched my headphone. Swap those out, now you're back in business. So if nothing physical has changed, and it's always worth a check, but if nothing's changed, then it's probably a matter of this other thing, which is your desktop and your application controls. I can't tell you how many times people forget that there are two places that you have to adjust sound. Your desktop, like the thing that you see when you turn on your computer, it usually has a sound control, right? It's got usually up in the little system tray or down in the system tray, wherever you have that. There's usually a speaker icon with some sound waves coming out of it, and you can click on it and pull a slider up or down to make your sound louder or quieter, or sometimes you can even use it. We've all had to do that sometimes, right? It's late at night, you don't want to disturb someone in the same space, so you mute your speakers or whatever. And now in the morning you get up and you're trying to play music and nothing's playing. Why? Well, because you muted the thing last night, but it was late and now you've forgotten. So that's the desktop sound system. And if you have reason to believe that that's misconfigured, then you can certainly go in and configure it differently. And the way that you usually do that is through some kind of system setting control panel. On KDE 4, it is in the multimedia section under audio and video settings. You're probably not using KDE 4 anymore unless you're on Slackware. Otherwise, you're using KDE 5. It's basically the same thing. Point is that it tells you how the Plasma desktop by KDE prioritizes different inputs and outputs. And it doesn't always make sense, to be honest. I find that sometimes it gets a little bit confused as to what should be higher in priority. And I kind of wish sometimes it was almost a little bit more interactive, kind of like I could maybe remove something that I never, ever will use. Of course, the minute you say that, then you come back and then you think, oh, well, I know I said I'd never, ever use that thing, but actually I meant I was going to use it today, as it turns out. So I guess my wish is probably not something that's a reasonable desire. So, but yeah, you go in there, you can prioritize different things, and you can test sounds and stuff like that. So, it's a useful thing to do. And in GNOME, there's something similar to that. There's the sound settings, actually. It's just Pulse, really. But point being, you can tell your desktop what device you want to control when you're controlling that audio output, and it will ideally do that. Now, the other side of that equation is what the application has been told to do, and that's a completely different thing. So, I mean, sometimes, certainly in KDE 4, and I feel like I've seen it in KDE 5, certainly the mixer, your desktop mixer, actually displays a bunch of different things. So when you click that speaker icon, you're not just configuring your primary output, you have access to application volumes as well. So for instance, I have Amarok, the music playing application, idling in the background. It's something that just turns on when I put on my computer, because I generally use it to listen to music. So it's idling in the background. So right now, if I click my speaker icon, I have my built-in audio stereo, which is my primary output. But then I also have Amarok, I have Event Sounds, and I have Audacity, because it's even seeing the Audacity levels. So I could adjust all of those things just from that icon. Now, people complain that KDE is too complex, and so you have desktops like GNOME that basically give you two controls, your output and your input, and that's it. So that's fine. Those are two different options for you. Point is, you want to make sure those are turned up if that's what you're aiming for. Now, Amarok, for instance, is back here, and it has its own volume control. Not all applications do, but generally, if it's playing sound, there's probably a sound volume or a volume for that application's sound. For instance, when you click on a video or a sound in Firefox, it brings up that little HTML5 player, and built into that is its own little audio controller. So, and a lot of times that's turned down by default, because if you're like me, at least you've configured it such that media doesn't autoplay, and if it does autoplay, it's muted by default, and so on. So that's the second part of this problem, is what is your desktop volume set to, and what is your application volume set to? And you want to make sure that both of those are set to things so that they deliver the sound that you expect. If you haven't done that, then you've not troubleshooted correctly. Troubleshot. It happens all the time. It happens to the best of us. There are mute buttons, there are volume controls all over every application, and you can predict on a video call or like a video conference that someone, and sometimes it's you, forgets to hit the mute button, or forgets to enable some kind of input for that application or that conference software or whatever. Happens all the time. It happens to the best of us, and it's okay. It's fine. The important thing is to just stay calm and think about what you know. You know about your computer because you've stepped through Pulse and Mixer, you've stepped through Pulse Audio, you've looked at those physical connections on your computer, you know how they map to those things. They're active. You're seeing a signal, and then you look at your desktop sounds to make sure that there's nothing overriding any of your of this the settings that you see in your sound configurations, and then you look at the application sound and you make sure that those are correctly set. If you've verified those four things, I feel like I can pretty much say confidently that the problem's on the other person's end. Or it might be on the software's end. Something out of your control, potentially. Functionally out of your control. I mean, if it's not open source software, then it may be truly out of your control. Even if it is open source software, though, in the moment of a video conference or whatever, you're not going to delve into the source code, correct it real quick, compile, relaunch, and be back in business, probably. So functionally, it's out of your control. Sometimes that happens. The software just it accepts your audio, it shows you that it's accepting your audio, and it just sends it to somewhere else. DevNull, maybe. Who knows? No one knows. So that's something that you can't control. You also can't control if the person on the other end has done something foolish and is dropping your sound somehow. A lot of times, just restarting everyone's computers on their all ends is the way to fix it, because it, generally speaking, resets all the audio settings back to some sort of sane default. It's an ugly fix, but when you're dealing with someone who you can't reach into their computer and fix their audio settings for them, that's kind of all you that's the best you can do. So there you go. That's troubleshooting audio. Physical sound drivers, desktop settings, application settings. Pretty much in that order, that's how you want to troubleshoot it. Stay calm, step through those things, get familiar and comfortable with both Awesome Mixer and Pulse Audio, and trust in the software. Trust me, I'm asking you for, I guess, a lot of different trusts, but you can trust me on this. You can trust the software, because 9 times out of 10, when something's not working, it is simply because someone is panicking somewhere and making some dumb mistake. At least in audio, that has been my experience, and video for that matter. And it very often happens when there's the sense of expectation or pressure being placed upon you. You think, well, everyone's looking at me right now, and this isn't working, and everyone's going to start calling out about what they think needs to happen in order to fix the problem. And wouldn't it be easier to just give up and grab a Windows machine or a Mac and plug that in instead? And that way, no one will have a problem, because those are closed source, and we can't critique that. Those will just work, right? Well, no. In my experience, that's not correct. They don't just work. But everyone's sort of used to how they don't work, and they know the troubleshooting process, and so it goes differently. Whereas on Linux, so many people just don't even bother, that there are a lot of people who don't actually do the troubleshooting because they don't know what to troubleshoot. Now, I think we all do know what to troubleshoot. Physical ports, the sound server, desktop application, and then the applications. Make sure those are all properly configured, and you're good to go. As someone who deals with audio on Linux very, very often, I feel pretty confident in saying that. So, thank you very much for listening. Sorry there was no coffee break today. I've been sneaking sips of coffee in all this time. I forgot to warn you. I forgot to tell you. Hopefully, you weren't waiting for a coffee break and just took it upon yourself to grab a coffee. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. Podcast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network, usually in channels such as Ogcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is at Klaatu at mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu at member.fsf.org. That's klaatu at member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, gnuworldorder.info and slackermedia.info. I will see you next time.
as well as being in these pages and anything, but out of hippocampal demons.
Oh my god, how exactly does this all fit into the theory here?
Well, I'm afraid to tell you that these creatures, as we call them, are not dead. They live no longer in the shape of reason, but they lurk outside our universe, waiting always to enter and reclaim their former domain.
Sure are weird looking.